We're settling our feet firmly back stateside in the USA for an episode to discuss recently held winter tournaments. So let's slide into a new episode of the podcast. Tom here, or Mr. T, or at least that's what it says on the back of my jacket. I recently added a rubber face to my go-to putter, and I am absolutely loving it. Maybe I'm biased by a Division II win in Putt 18 and strong showing in real-life tournaments, but I'm loving how the splash of blue feels when I connect with the ball. You can find all the mini golf designs, reviews, and more for myself and the Pink Putter at acoupleofputts.com, on social media at coupleofputts. Hey, and if you're looking for a course design or design a hole, check out minigolfdesigners.com and check out some of our work. We got a bunch of projects coming up that I'll be excited to share about. And mini golf day is just around the corner and you need something fun to wear, go to minigolfgoods.com and why not pick up some fun stuff to wear or maybe drink some coffee out of.
And I'm Pat, the co-founder of the mini golf website and social media conglomerate, The Putting Penguin. We're starting to come out of the dark of the winter up here up north, and I'm getting a little jealous of all these winter tournaments that I haven't been to, but I'm really itching to get to a tournament this spring. Luckily, we do have an indoor course that's not too far away from us, and I've been sadly ignoring that for many, many years. But recently, we've had a chance to help some friends prep for an international tournament, which we'll talk a little bit about later in the episode. So that's kind of met my mini golf needs here in a week in and week out basis. If you're looking for our Penguin mini golf antics, including all of our course reviews, you can find us at The Putting Penguin on most of the major social media outlets, or you can visit our website at theputtingpenguin.com. And while you're out there checking out all the stuff on the internets, why don't you go follow the Puttcast mini accounts? And since you're clearly in love with our podcast, make sure you're liking, subscribing, and giving us a great review wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
Of course you're aware, but just to remind you, this is the official podcast of the American Mini Golf Alliance, the AMA. You know all about us, and membership does remain free through 2024 for anybody who wants to become a member anywhere in the world. And you can become a member or renew over at amaminigolf.com. We're encouraging members who've been part of the AMA to renew early this year. We're asking everybody to opt in to have the results count towards national ranking. We'll be tracking the points of all the competitors who play in our events, but only the active members will be included in our end of the year rankings. We want to thank Walkabout Mini Golf and our other sponsors for supporting the AMA and helping make it possible for us to continue offering free membership to all of you through 2024. And for those of you who have become new members, maybe the end of last year, beginning of this year, I just send out your membership cards. I even posted a photo over on social media. So keep an eye out for them in the mail. And if you've renewed, and maybe you lost your membership card at some point or another and you want a brand spanking new one, hit me up. We'll figure it out. We're going to charge people probably a nominal amount just to cover our expenses on that, but we want to make sure you all have a nice, fresh membership card in your wallet. So, yeah, thank you to everybody who's already renewed and already playing in events. It's been exciting, and I guess that's where we're going to start, right?
You got a good one to kick it off, right? Because let's see, Tom, what's the first tournament we're going to talk about?
Well, we already talked about, because it's been so long since we've done a podcast, we're like, had we talked about Prodigy? And it's like, yes, I did a little add-in. Neither of us went. I don't know if we could give much color, but Dave Veda crushed it in that playoff. And then our second in-person event was the Coziest Open in Minnesota at Golf Zone, that I've hosted and that I'd won 2 years ago before it was an AMA event, and it was only two rounds. This year, we expanded it to a third round for the top six in stroke play, and then we had an aces-only round for the pros who didn't make the top six. And then we opened up an amateur division, and that might have been the story of the tournament for me on one level, because it was 19 amateurs and 15 pros. We had 34 people. For context, there was 16 and 14 respectively the last 2 years in this winter tournament. So doing a shorter amateur tournament within a larger tournament, that has just been so popular, and we're just going to keep doing it with a couple of putts. But the pro stroke play, I've never shot in the 20s at Golf Zone, and I shot a 29 my first round, and I was like, well, I've never done that before. And I was playing with Mike Pendleton and Brian Akers from Putters League, who came up with his partner Amanda. And then after the second round, someone's like, how'd you do the second round? And I'm like, I shot one better. They're like, what? So, Mick Cullen, I think, shot a combined, 63 over the first two rounds, and I was at 57. And after three holes in the third round, he cut that gap by two. So I was like, uh-oh. And then just put it back on. I ended up shooting a 31 in the last round. Each of the rounds, I think I've talked about it. So Golf Zone has four holes that if you make a particular hole and only on the first shot, and in the case of one of the holes, you have to make it on a particular path, you get a zero. So add three strokes to all of my rounds for a little bit more context. But yeah, I mean, that's how the course is played, and we play with those rules. And I made my zero shots in every round, but I made very few mistakes. I dropped two shots in three rounds. I think that's the best I've played any tournament, let alone that. I don't think I've had three rounds at Aloha where I haven't dropped two shots. And this one has, this course has a lot of holes where it's a little hard to get in trouble, but then there's a few where it gets dicey. There's this one with the sand trap behind it where the dirt is so compacted into the turf that once you miss, the ball kind of has a mind of its own, and your next putt, you just have to be confident. I remember telling Mike Pendleton, who I was playing with, and he stepped up to that ball 4 feet away, and he's like, ugh, I'm just like, just did it confidently. And he did, and it went in, but it's hard not to, because if you miss by a little, see ya, the ball just keeps rolling, and you know you got another long exact putt like that. But yeah,
That's impressive. I mean, I've never played the course, but I've seen the pictures and stuff, right? Yeah, they're not all tap in twos when you miss it. So to only drop two shots in three rounds is quite an achievement.
And I learned a lot from making mistakes over the last 2 years since I had won it previously. I think that year I just really hit the ace, zero shots at the right time. And our first tournament, I won it with like a 68. So that was 11 strokes higher than what I shot this year, and 68 wouldn't have made it into the top six. So yeah. And the funny thing was, is we were coming around the turn at about hole 10 or 11, and Mick had dropped one or two, and now all of a sudden my lead was pretty safe. And then someone, I think it was Zach Casilius, who wasn't playing, ran over to his brother Caden, who I was playing with, was like, Cameron just shot a 27. I was like, wait, what? I was like, okay, I've dropped some shots. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of scoreboard watching. I just need to like focus on how I'm playing. And yeah, and it's funny. I stepped up to the last show and I made that zero shot, which is a really tough ace. It's like an all or nothing. If you miss it, it's a two. If you make it, it's really, really hard. And it's one that I've practiced, honestly, a little bit with some like squishier dead balls, because it plays great with those, way easier to hit them with a golf ball. But yeah, Cameron crushed it and had a 27 and came in second. And this is after last year where we only had the one division. He was in the last place. And Cameron Casilius has played in the miniest, the looniest, and he's been getting a little bit better and better, but in local leagues, I don't know if it's, he's got this new glove that he got for Christmas, like a golf glove, but his confidence and everything is just so much better. And he's just been playing great. And it was just a nice moment for him. Like, I was glad to have won it and not blown a lead, but yeah. And then I ended up having most aces over the first two rounds with Sean Brown in a league night. We just broke the tie, and I'll put that video up on Instagram, but Sean beat me. he won the one shot golf pack. Both of us had already had that pack, but it was one of those ones where I would have liked that. But on the day of our Aces only round, we had a three-way tie between Anthony Dunkel, Amanda Farahany, and Marcel Nijhuis. And Anthony Dunkel won, which was a nice moment. And then our massive amateur field, Mark Giannini shot a 65, which would have qualified over two rounds, which would have qualified him for our top six. He played with his son and my friend Maggie and just dialed in. I guess he goes and plays there regularly. He's played amateur in a bunch of our tournaments previously and never taken the top spot. And so he's another one of those, like my wife Robin, who after winning an amateur one will end up moving up and playing more pro. But it's also nice to have those little moments where you're playing against people that are a little bit closer to your speed. You get a win under your belt and it feels good. I think Cameron had done that in some kind of juniors events in our local leagues, and I'd love to see it. It's really hard. I mean, you and I know this really well. If you judge yourself against the top players right away, it just kind of makes it feel impossible to make any progress. Like if you're going to the Masters every year and you're like, well, I'm fifth from the bottom instead of the bottom, it doesn't feel like much. And sadly, if you're not in the money at all, or heck, even amateur, kind of not recognized at all at the Masters. And I don't know, I like having that space to have wide recognition of the players.
Well, and it's tough too, because right, like it's a sport that doesn't have a large amount of people. So, I mean, it's equivalent to like, if you were a very good scratch golfer and not even showing up at like the US Open, it's like, if you just went to go play a normal PGA Tour event, and because you're up against those level of people, and doesn't have to be like Rory and Tiger, it could be somebody who's 20th or 30th in the world, but like you're playing against those people immediately in every single mini golf event because there's just not that many players. So yeah, to judge yourself that way and just instead sit there and be like, well, I've got this progression. And it's great. It's great stories to see because it mirrors a lot of what we've gone through. And you sit there and you're like, well, I hope everybody can stay with it. And I'm sitting here going, man, it's going to be a lot harder to go back to back at the Lunius now, because all these guys I played against, the women I played against last time, have now a year more experience, more confidence. They've won stuff. And I hope we see a lot of the players that you had there. I mean, that's an impressive amateur field. And I remember we had some of that at Matterhorn. It's just, it is really great to see because you're engaging it, and some of them you'll never see again, but at least they came out and played, and that's great.
And I'd be remiss not to mention that there was actually a playoff for second in amateur between Kathleen Malone and Matt Tellender, who as part of the Mini Golf US crew, and I think they put that up on their channel, but Matt ended up winning the two-hole playoff. But that was the first hardware for both of them, that both Kathleen coming in third and Matt coming in second, that they had played in our tournaments previously and not won anything, and was super cool. And it's funny, we hadn't had that many juniors and that many women played our tournaments, but immediately it was brought up by like Amanda Farahany and some other people, like, you should have a women's division. So we've never had tournaments where we have seven women playing. And I believe the number was 10 people that were 16 years old or younger. We just had a lot of father and son families coming out and bringing their kids. And I think for a fun event where we encourage people to wear their pajamas, it works in the middle of the winter on a Sunday morning. It's good, wholesome fun, and you can get a drink at the bar and a frozen pizza afterwards. What more do you want in the dead of winter in Minnesota? It's great. So yeah, that was a it was kind of surprising and baffling and some other stuff. But if you saw some of the social media, the other thing you saw is that we have new relief rulers for the AMA that my wife Robin made, that I'm very excited to have those out at tournaments doing these little things for the AMA. But enough about that. We go to another winter tournament.
Winter tournament. This one outdoor over in my neck of the woods, although this half of the Penguin didn't play. Mandy did go down and represent the Putting Penguin family well. So we were at the O Street Winter Classic, which has been running for several years now, and is
ninth year.
I think it's eighth. Let me see. I had it pulled up. Do we have? We don't have the actual number in the here. It's I mean, it's one of our longer running ones at this point. It's usually been the one to kick off the season, but now we've got some other stuff that we've been playing. But yeah, they go out there, diehards outside, whatever the weather is. It was a kind of chilly day. It was over at Manchester Family Fun Center in Manchester, New Jersey, which is kind of mid-state-ish, I'm sure. All my New Jersey friends are yelling at me because they're so vehemently territorial about what's north, south, and if Central Jersey actually even exists. But it's over there somewhere.
Officially the ninth. I thought that I remember seeing that in the social media posts. So that's even longer than Matterhorn.
Than Matterhorn, yeah. Yeah, because we'll only be on our eighth this year. Yeah, they've been doing it a while. And they've had good years of weather and some interesting years. And it's always fun because they just kind of play with what the course gives them. And you know, this was an okay course. O Street's got some videos from the tournament himself already up on YouTube and socials, and then they've got a longer video where Aaron and I think it was Joe went out and played the course beforehand, so you can kind of get a good look at it. Mm-hmm. It might have been Evan. I can't remember which two. I've watched so many. It was a Joe. I've watched so many of their videos back to back that they blur together sometimes. But they had a crowd of 15 players. They did have four women there, so still good, pretty good percentage. And the story is going to be the Weiss family this year, because Griffin picks up now back-to-back Winter Classic wins. He won in a playoff over Brother Landon, who was the winner of the O Street not $1,000 tournament in the summer last year.
The Open.
And the Open, yeah. I guess it's just the Open now. Still like to call it the $1,000 tournament. I think it rings well. You just got to call it the like $3,000 tournament at some point.
The $10,000 pyramid.
Yeah. The 10,000 in parentheses, not quite there yet tournament. but Griffin, Tom and I, we were talking about this kind of offline. Like, he starts the season off well. He's traveled to these other things. I mean, he could put up a year. Yeah. He put up a year last year, and he's showing no signs, and in Landon as well, although I think he's maybe got college that might come into play here bit more. So we'll have that, at least for our old folks, in our favor. So not, maybe not have to play against, although a lot of the tournaments are the summer, so who knows?
Also under 18. And like, I go back to the coziest. You have Cameron, who's 16. To me, that's really exciting to see the game growing in this way.
Yeah. And when we get to some of the stuff later, I mean, Caleb's still in high school. So I think we're starting to accomplish, and hopefully we can continue this of like growing that youth game that we've always talked about. So, Mandy gave me the kind of report. I saw her yesterday. I mean, it was a, you know, the way she put it, classic Winter Classic tournament. Everybody had a good time. You don't really play for any money. Go out there, knocked out a couple rounds. It was a good group of people. Everybody enjoyed it. I would, like I said, encourage, go over to O Street, check out some of the videos and stuff. They just put up a drone one, which is always fun to look at. And that was pretty much it for that one, our first outdoor one of the year.
Yeah, same weekend. Go back indoors, and we had our first virtual event of the year on Walkabout. And again, we utilize the scores from a tournament that was already organized and built into the Discord channel that Walkabout's parent company, Mighty Coconut, runs. I don't know if it's like that Walkabout necessarily runs it, but they just kind of give it their blessing. And it's been amazing. This is the start of their 12th season, and we've opted to use the first week of the beginning of the season just because it puts every course in play, and it forces people that week to really grind it out and practice two courses, one easy, one hard. And it was announced the week before that it was going to be Journey to the Center of the Earth easy and Atlantis hard, which are both downloadable content, non-base games, and pretty hard courses in general. I had not played Journey competitively at all. It is those rocks on that course.
Yeah, that's one of my, I just don't play it a lot. Like, it's fun to play, and when you do play it a couple times in a row, you can start to do it. But yeah, that's one. And even Atlantis Hard is another one where I don't really jump in there that often. I love the easy side. The easy side is like one of those nice, just like go play, enjoy the atmosphere. And actually, the Atlanta's hard. I love the atmosphere. Like I could just put that on as a screensaver, but oof, that is a rough course to play.
They are both brutal. And the aces on both courses are really, really hard to come by consistently. With Journey, there's lots of rocks. With Atlantis, there's as many tee shots where you can get yourself in a great position or get an ace, and in some cases, like nearly stroke out. And the result, though, of this two-round tournament is a familiar face. Jorge Rimblas, who's from Minnesota, originally from Mexico, he helped do a lot of the stats for the league, and he's one of the best players. He won by 2 strokes over Mick Cullen. And here's the interesting thing. Hole 17 on Atlantis, he took a 5. And he aced the final hole. Mick took a 4 on the final hole. So that ace that people who've played Atlantis hard, which is super fussy. You have to, there's like 3 lower pipes that at best you can get a 3. But the upper pipe, if you have to really like take this precise shot, crush it in, get it in, you can get an ace, but you can stroke out. I took a 4 on that hole. I somehow got in the top half, but I took a 4 because I took one shot at the ace shot and I was like, I could be here all day. I went for the lower one to get the 3 and came away with that. But if you end up going for the ace, it goes down the wrong pipe. That you're playing for par, a 5. And Jorge won it on the last hole. He and Matt Rolstad, familiar face, who is in our top 2 or 3. I think he was number 2 last year in the AMA season. They both ended up with 6 aces over those 2 courses. And I know Matt had a really, really tough start to Atlantis. If you look at the scores and we eventually get up the round by round stuff, he had a really bad maybe front 5 or 6. And part of it's like every tee shot, if you don't get it on the first, it starts to get in your head and it just, it's brutal. And it's really impressive that Mick came in second and he only got 2 aces across both courses. He had like some of the fewest aces. So he played really, really steady. And then we had Sean Brown come in third, who's a familiar name to people in Walkabout, Minnesota Mini Golf. He was in the top 10 in the AMA last year. He was just a stroke or two behind Mick as well. And I've playing in the Walkabout League and the Discord channel this season. And the week that we're recording this is going to be Alfheim Hard, which I realized I hadn't played. And then Labyrinth Easy, which Labyrinth Easy is probably the hardest easy. And I'll say to all the people that play competitive mini golf that are skeptical, there's so many different types of courses on this game that if you want something novel or themed, it's there. But course like Alfheim, where there's lots of like, you know, you need to hit the ball straight line. There's like a hole that looks like the fishbone one or whatever they call it in the Swedish felt, where it's got the whole, you know, you got to really hit like a direct straight line path. It's the same process. You need to hit the ball straight. You deviate and it messes you up, and it's good practice. I mean, I'm happy even to give a shout out. I don't think they're available right now for sale, but the Hello Real controller extension that gives a little bit of weight to those controllers, it's really good practice. It takes some getting used to, but if you're a good putter, you'll do well. Heck, the night before, Aaron Kaminsky hadn't played the courses and was like, hey, I should probably get in a round or two. And I was like, I'll meet up with you. He did fine. He did pretty well in the tournament for literally playing the courses the night before. And part of it's because if you're a good putter and you have a good form, it translates to the game. It's why we're using that and Putt 18 in our virtual series. Is there, it's not a coincidence that some of the people who did really well, Matt Rolstad, Mick Cullen, Sean Brown, all of them who do well on Walkabout, and frankly, Sean Brown had a really great season in the league for putt 18 as well. They play well in real life. Like it's a translatable skill, and why not bring it into play where people who can play no matter where they live around the world and lots of part of the U.S. where there's just not organized competitive mini golf. It's a great option, and there'll be another opportunity to earn points in that later in the year, probably late October at the earliest, probably early November. We'll try to announce it as early as possible, but mark it on your calendar and know you'll have a chance to get some points, and we max you out in the virtual anyway, so it's not as if you won. You know, Jorge's like stacking up points. He's got five. He can't get any more than that. He's going to have the top virtual spot for walkabout for the season, and well-earned.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about walkabout all the time, right? But I do like that. There's such a variety, right? You could play a course like Tourist Trap or even Gothic Easy, where if you just played it like a normal mini golf course, you would shoot about a normal mini golf score. Like, you don't have to play it like a video game to just do, like, forget the competitive side, right? But just to go out and say, like, I'm playing some mini golf when it's 10 degrees outside and I don't want to go outside. And then you can get some of the ones that are, you know, maybe like in Atlantis or some of the more DLC ones that have a little bit more of the video game feel if you really want to, like, go, like Meow Wolf, right? Like, I mean, that one's way on the other end of the spectrum, but it's fun just to be like, well, and go in here and have a good time. So, yeah, I mean, well, we talk about it all the time. We love it. It translates well. And we're going to move on to serious mini golfing now because it involves sports betting. As we talk about the World Putting League, which is back in action the week we're recording here. So we're recording on Thursday. They had a couple things earlier in the week here in February, one of which was a qualifier. So I don't know, Tom, if you ever got any more information. We got some bare information about how people got into this, what the whole deal was. But at the end of the day, there were 20 players who were playing for a future spot in a WPL event. As far as how they got to that point, who knows? But the point was they ended up playing
Facebook posts at the last minute, like, hey, if you want to play in this. And it's like, cool. We're like up in the northern / northeast part of the United States. Yeah. Like, we're not going to fly all the way down for three round tournament.
Except
some people did.
Yeah. Matt, I mean, some people really wanted to. Yeah.
Matt Krause, three time winner of Red Putter, who's played the US Open once, traveled down for it. He did pretty good. Top five, I think.
Yeah. So they played three rounds at the quote unquote Aloha North, or what we call Pineapple, on Sunday the 25th. And there was 20 players. You mentioned Matt, but you know, friends of the pod, Brian Akers, Vinette Block, Danny Badley, Jared Mutter, he came down from the Northeast, Corey Klotz, more. Interestingly enough, though, won by someone who is unknown to at least me at the time, Max Savard from Canada, with a 7-under over the three rounds, which, when we talk about what happened the next day in the actual WPL, was a pretty decent score. I mean, actually, honestly, 7-under even at the Masters is a good score for three rounds at Pineapple for someone who I assume has not played that course a whole lot. So he punched his ticket to some event in the future, and we'll see how the other players come out. But an interesting thing that they added, honestly, from a WPL side, there really wasn't much information. Like, everything we got was either from like Vinette posting things or Greg Newport had posted some stuff. So thanks to them for keeping us in the loop. But really, that was the appetizer to the Survivor Series that is kicking off here, which honestly, I think took Tom and I about 48 hours to figure out the exact format of what was going on. And I will try to explain it the best I can. So there are two qualifying events for episode one and episode two. The first was held last Monday. The second one will be held the first Monday in March.
Probably when this episode goes live.
Basically, yeah. There were or will be six competitors in each one of those episodes. The top three finishers of one round at Pineapple then played a sudden death playoff. And so we'll get into who got all of this. And that winner automatically goes to the final round in April. And then they do the same thing on this Monday. So two automatic qualifiers were the winners of the sudden death. And then of the other 10 people who remained collectively, the best two scores from their one round go to the final, and they're going to play a bracket one versus one tournament to determine the overall survivor winner. So if that made perfect sense, head to head, full 18, I think.
And then
head to head winners of that. Yeah.
Got it.
So they've kind of combined a couple of different versions that they've done throughout 2023. And I mean, it's an interesting format. I think it's, again, when you're looking at availability and stuff to be able to do two Mondays in 2 months, it's, I mean, you're definitely playing for money. And obviously there's some names there that we've talked about and how they're able to do it. It's a little bit kind of a pain in the butt logistically, but it's at least from a viewer standpoint, it gives us plenty to watch as they go through. And I like that they're doing new stuff. Like it's keeping it interesting too, right? Like it's not just the same format every time.
Well, and it's like what Holy Moly did, that I know some of the people that probably played this event didn't like Holy Moly, but Holy Moly made sense in the, you know, when it comes to storytelling, trying to tell the story of 80 people playing the Masters is impossible. And even like our season, they were trying to tell the story of what, 12 people per episode. And they broke that all the way down to 8, and all of a sudden they could tell more stories. And that's kind of what they're doing in each of these episodes, is they're doing 6 people. And much like Holy Moly, you kind of get what you get. It might not always be perfect. Some people might think after the event, like, oh, I can see why some of these, you know, Holy Moly, like, cuts things down a bit and doesn't show everything. Because when the pressure's on and you have a camera on you and you have to move at a much slower pace because people are filming it, and the pressure is on because it's not just, you know, a 4-round marathon, but like every putt counts. Here you get a little bit more room than Holy Moly. But yeah, I mean, 3 people playing in a group, and they know that they need to be the people in their group at the very least. And even that might not even be enough. So hole 1, you don't get the ace and you're like, crap. Hole 2, you get out of position, you drop it, which happens regularly, and you're like, crap. That happens in Masters. You're like, that's a bummer start, but I've got another 2 rounds and 16 holes to go. I'm not stressing yet, but this format.
2 other courses that you're playing too, right? Like, right. I mean, Pineapple at the Masters tends to be the one that we all just try to survive through.
Yes.
And it just put up. Yeah, you play it the least. It's the most difficult. You just want to not put up big crooked numbers.
Yep.
And it's, I like that they have taken that. And even when the US Open was there, right? 6 rounds, 8 rounds, whatever they played, there's a lot more volume there. This kind of takes that course that we all just sort of just want to get through and puts the spotlight on it. And like you said, now every hole is different. And, you know, it took 3 hours to play, which was both good because it was interesting and bad for my productivity at work that day. But it did have, especially, so we could talk about it now. So the first group we had, actually, I didn't even write down the whole first group. So it was Rick Alessi, Gary Hester, and
Ken Cranford.
Dr. Ken Cranford. Crawford. They were the first group. So you're watching the first group, and they honestly did not have low scores. I mean, I think Rick came in at 1 under, and Gary and Kent were above par, which, I mean, anybody knows Gary. Obviously, we've talked about him, had him on. We know the conditions were tough that day. It was windy. We had Vinette and Greg in the chat on the WPL side giving some on-the-site reporter stuff there. So that course, which is already, I mean, my best score for 3 rounds was 2 under, like, that I've ever done. So, like, adding on bad conditions. So you have that first group to go through, and now you actually do have the drama of the second group where you've got Brian Johnson, Tim Talley, and Jeremy and Avenette. And that's the story stuff, right? And they even talked about it. It's like, well, that group now knows what they're shooting for.
Yep.
As a viewer, you know what you're shooting for. And plus, there's the over-unders and all the betting side, which goes along with it. And that this format, I think, really lent itself to being really engaged on a hole-by-hole basis, because you could just see people creeping up, people sliding down, and what's it going to do? And you have, they talked about it like, Rick, if you're in the clubhouse, you're just kind of waiting to see what happens for everybody else. And the way it ended up was two of the people from the last group ended up making the sudden death. So it was Brian and Rick and Tim Talley who did the sudden death. And like you said, and they talked about in the commentary, those first three holes are great for sudden death, because you have an ace hole, you have a don't blow up hole, then you have another ace hole right after that.
Yeah.
And I'm actually sort of surprised, and maybe they couldn't do this because you didn't know who was going to play the sudden death, but the guy, like, I know the guys at Hammer and stuff were talking about like an over under of how many holes the sudden death would actually take. That would be a great bet. And what we found out is hole two did it in. We didn't see any aces on hole one during the original rounds, but Tim and Brian ended up acing and knocking Rick out on that first hole. And then they went to hole two and Brian took a three and Tim won. Although the most unfortunate thing for the streaming happened in that it froze on Tim's tee shot. There's a great picture of the ball was coming up the hill almost to the curve and it just froze. Oof. And everybody's like, what happened? It's like the lights going out in the Super Bowl. It's like, what is going on? But we found out that Tim made it. And so we're really happy because we're obviously good friends with Tim. And
Tim's great.
So he's punched his ticket and now everybody else has to wait. And I was looking at some of the odds and stuff for this week's, and it's interesting to see some of it has been adjusted with, they think this group's going to have more hole-in-ones on hole eight because the over under for this round was only half, and it's 1.5 for next week. But who knows, you know, if it's a beautiful day, those scores could be a lot lower, and everybody who played this first week could be SOL. You know, you could have six people shoot more better than minus one next week, right? And then you're kind of knocked out. So I'm really interested to see how that goes. I guess we'll probably have at least one more recording, you know, before the final, so we'll be able to talk a little bit about how that's going to shape up. But I would suggest, you know, if you're into it, it's the World Putting League, go check them out, throughout the year, and we'll see what else they do.
Yeah, lots of great players left. Joey Graybeal, Greg Newport, John Powell, Randy Reeves, John Ventura, and Michael Rutledge are going to be in that second group. And so you could see two of the wild card or whatever the next best scores come out of this group easily with those players, and they could shoot really low, but who knows at those conditions. I think that was the only thing I didn't like about it being at Pineapple is you and I know that there are some really, really weird holes on that course. They're really nasty breaks, and it doesn't translate to TV. It's great as far as testing your skill and your note-taking and your charting and your deuce putting. But watching multiple people miss like 3-foot putts doesn't necessarily, to me, give the best representation of the game. I know some people had made some comments about the Mossy Creek event too, and I'm just like, it's hard for people to understand how challenging some of these courses are on a different level. And in some ways, there's no way to really do that, which is why I feel like it's a little bit easier on Aloha where the scores go really low and the deuces aren't as fussy, or on Rumble where the holes are a little bit bigger and more interesting. I'm not a huge fan of Pineapple. I have some holes that I've done well on there, but that one, that course just always feels like a little bit of a thorn in my side, especially when you get close to the cup. And honestly, I'm just grateful I've never had to play that in bad weather because,
oh yeah,
that the balls just like nobody in either of the first two groups aced one. And you know, if you've played the course, the front nine and probably even into like 10 and, or what would it be? Yeah, 10 and then 12 and sometimes 13, you can get aces and then it's kind of done. Like if you get something on 14, 15, 16, 17 or 18, money in the bank. Like 16, you can get the others. I don't even know how low of a percentage they are in those holes, but it, you know, it's different than Rumble where everybody's aced pretty much every hole at some point in practice leading up to the Masters, and Aloha, kind of the same thing. Maybe some people don't take ever practice or try the shot on eight, but everything else, you know, there's like a path to the cup. Yeah, Pineapple is a grind. I don't know if it just translates as well. So that was my only small thing, was seeing people miss those short putts. I get it. I don't know as like a viewer's perspective if it necessarily sells the top putters in the game missing three
putts. No, and I'll give Rob Pizzola a lot of credit because he was trying to give the same commentary because, you know, he's played it. He understands. Yes. He's been very involved in it. And he, like, I think understands the same thing. Because even when you look at hole one, you're like, it's kind of just like a straight putt through these rocks, right? But, like, you can't see how much that ball breaks, especially at the speed you have to hit it. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting viewpoint of where the other two courses that are more ace friendly and even the deuce putts aren't as susceptible to movement. Like there are a lot of breaks, especially on Rumble with the deuces, but like it just is not as touchy. And even when you're watching, like, I know Jeremy went out of bounds and even Rick went out of bounds too on 11, like, and you just look at it from the way putting out. I mean, I knew he had hit it too hard, but like from a casual viewer, it'd be like, well, why did you just like ram it out of bounds? But like you do kind of have to ride the edge on some of those things. Yeah. And hole 18, like I know, like Rob was really talking about, because that's one where if you look at it, you're like, well, I just kind of hit it over this hump. And but it's like nasty. When you actually stand there, you're like, well, no shit, the ball comes all nasty. The way over here. And
well, then on top of it. Yeah, the tee bot, the tee setup for righties is so close, or you just have to get so close to the wall. Just that whole course.
But I can't imagine playing that in bat. Like, no. I've never played it in rain, damp weather. Ugh. Like, how hard you would have to hit that ball on 18.
Yeah.
Like, to get it over the hump, but then you probably would still be way still back in the swing corner because it wouldn't carry at all. Or even. Yeah, some of those hole four where you're really just like touching it to go past that edge. Like if it's damp. Now I'm looking at the weather and it looks like they'll actually have the best day of the week right now. Now it's still a couple days early, partly cloudy, a little bit of wind. Of course, you go either day and it's rain. So who knows? I mean, you're still a couple days out. But if that rain, oof, good luck.
Yeah. It's one of those courses where hearing that they also put those berms over the side because they wanted to stop people from going so low. It's like, I don't remember anybody getting a perfect 18 there, to my knowledge. But yeah, it would be interesting to have played the course in that condition. It still would be tough, but the risk of it going out of bounds makes so many of those holes really, really dicey. But we'll be watching. And yeah, I love being able to see broadcast mini golf and see courses that I've played and watch people under that pressure. That's kind of the experience we wanted everybody in mini golf to have after having that experience ourselves on Holy Moly. So I'm excited about it. I hope it keeps going. Love that there's a Canadian. You know,
I would love more broadcast mini golf though at like 7 o'clock at night. Be a little bit, a little bit nicer to my work. I mean, not that I don't mind, you know, having it. I mean, whatever. I've watched a million sports during work, but like, there are a few sports I watch as closely when I actually know the people who are playing.
It was just really fun. The second group, I know you'll touch on it later, but really, really fun energy. And in particular, like Jeremy was not having a great round. It was just like really up and down. And I love that he was keeping a good smile on his face. Because in that moment with the cameras there, sometimes it's like it feels like even worse. And some ways it's just like, just sell the game, like show that this is fun at the end of the day. And they did a really great job. Brian's energy. Yeah, it was super fun to see. I guess we should talk about a few upcoming events. And one of them that I hadn't had on our list that I'll even start off with is going to be happening on April 7th in Tampa at the Pop Stroke there. They're going to have the putting showdown that the National Putting Tour is doing. It looks like it's going to be a 3-round stroke play event with both the teams and a singles event wrapped into that. So you can check that out. National Putting Tour. So someone's still keeping the Pop Stroke dream alive with those really cool tournament courses. But then in our bias, we have a couple other newly confirmed courses to, or in tournaments. Our bias, we have a few new tournaments to mention. Yeah, so go for it.
I'll take the first one. So we've got the Maine Open, which is the event up at Tabor's, which I think this is their 10th year, if I'm correct.
Dang.
Yeah, so they've been doing that a long time. We just confirmed the date. That's going to be August 4th. Details will come out later on, but they basically run a 3-round tournament. It's going to be pretty much the same as normal. They get some good sponsors and stuff, and it's a cup that's got metal cups. Of course, it's got metal cups. Yeah, Harris Course. I played it in one of their fall tournaments, but like, I will put all of that aside. It is absolutely beautiful location on the lake. Like, there is very few places we get to play tournaments that just look as nice as that. And you know, Maine in the summer can still be hot and everything, but it's a good trip up there, and the owners do a good job. They're really invested. The Maine Mini Golf guys are great to hang out with, and they always have a good turnout. I know a lot of our Connecticut folks go up there, so excited to get that date confirmed for that weekend.
And then the other one that got announced and added, it will be a red tournament. The main one will be a white tiered tournament, which you'll learn about a little bit later, is the Mossy Creek Masters. And that is in Tennessee. It's the home of the Tennessee Open. We'll also have the Putters League Championship, which is also the Georgia State Open on the 26th of October. I don't know if I said the date for Mossy Creek Masters, but I'll say it again, September 28th. Should go play Mossy Creek. And then we got some really cool news. Corey Klotz, who we'd mentioned earlier, had run an AMA scoring tournament on the Putters course where it was the course championship. And we were not feeling optimistic from what we were hearing from Corey about the course continuing. But it is, I guess, connected to an ice arena. And it's now called Mastodon Ice Arena. And Corey had said that person who bought the course had something to do with something in skating. I believe it was like figure skating. I can't say that for certain, but sounds like the tournament will happen again, and Corey is trying to work that out, and I think it'll be part of the AMA season again later this year in Ohio. So very, very exciting to see that. And yeah, we don't want to say too much, but the Southern Swing is going to be announced at some point. We're privy to a lot of the dates, and they will all be eligible for AMA scoring. But we will give you those full dates once they announce themselves. But we're really, really excited to have between the Mossy Creek Masters, Putters League Championship in Georgia, and then a bunch of other tournaments on the Southern Swing, all part of the AMA this year, where people from traditional hotbed of mini golf, they're going to have an opportunity to score in all of the tiers and be ranked this year. So quite exciting on that front. Pat, what's a little bit further out this spring that you've been thinking about a little bit?
Yeah, it doesn't seem that far away. So, I mean, we've talked about the WMF World Adventure Golf Tour plenty on the podcast here because Matterhorn was the U.S. stop. So a couple quick things we're going to hit. The tour final for this first season's coming up at the end of April. It's the 27th and 28th. It's at Bowling Brno in the Czech Republic, which is the same place the World Adventure Golf Masters is going to be at. We have the pleasure of sending two folks from our Matterhorn tournament. So Dave Veda, who won the tournament, got an auto qualification. And then we were looking, unfortunately, Justin Seymour, who had also qualified, couldn't make it, but who Caleb Smith, who came in third place at Matterhorn, actually had qualified with a number of points as well. So he and Dave are both going over there. Caleb is probably going to be the youngest player over there because he, no?
No, I think so, because I don't think Mathieu is playing.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. I think
Mathieu Valček would have been the youngest, maybe.
Yeah. So Caleb's still senior in high school, so finishing up high school with a bang here in an international tournament. He's a big golfer, but actually both Dave and him are big golfers. And so I've had the pleasure of working with them at that local indoor course over at the bowling alley in Plainville, Connecticut, Lessard Lanes, and just been trying to get them used to mini golf balls. They've been using the rubber face putters and everything. And so it's been kind of fun to be a coach in some of that. A little bit of the FOMO gets taken away by playing with these guys. And right now it's almost every week we're getting out there, and I know they're going out even more than that. But we also do have a GoFundMe set up. We'll have that link in the bio because we've talked about before. It's pretty much all self-funded as we go on these international trips. And we've gotten some good response there. And, you know, I think we'll probably get at least to probably halfway funding these guys' trips over there.
Nice.
So we'll talk some more. We're going to try to probably get them on the podcast at least once, if not twice, to talk about their prep, talk about the way it went. So really excited there. And then just a couple quick hits on the next season, because that was recently announced, the 24-25 tour. So the tour final will be in 25, but this year's tour is 15 total tournaments, so up a few from last year. We've mentioned we've got the two tournaments now in the U.S., both of them the AMA events, so the Tennessee Open down at Mossy Creek in August, then Matterhorn a few weeks later. So an opportunity, if you can play both, you know, even if you don't win, there's probably a decent chance that you can get in on points if you do well in both of those tournaments. So really excited that we're expanding that, and we're also really excited where the final is. And so, Tom, I'll toss this one to you because – Sevi are good buds right now.
Yeah, I'm Sevi Kukielka, who we've had on the show and was kind enough to get me a Gloucester Aces kit. Gloucester Aces is going to be hosting the 2025 World Adventure Golf Tour Championship. The course, you can find it online, Frank. Bassesi's video channel, the Frankie Buckets. But if you look on some of the more recent BMGA posts, I think Sevi did a live stream from a recent event there. That was a doubles event. They expanded their course six holes over the winter. And I have a feeling they probably already had been talking about, hey, we're going to be expanding, and made it a great place to land the second WAG Tour final. And yeah, I'm really stoked that it's there. Sevi has told me that it's a course that frankly plays as well with mini golf balls as golf balls. I think all balls will be in play, so you can switch out and all that, but I don't know that it's going to give a distinct advantage, and it'll be interesting to see because I don't know when the last time a major international tournament outside, you know, you can talk about the BMGA events, but this is like a specific international event. I don't know when the last time they hosted a WAGM. They've probably never hosted a world championship. So this is a big deal getting it up there in Gloucester Aces. And I'm hoping to go over to play in the World Adventure Golf Masters in the Czech Republic. I'm kind of planning on it. And I had thought, man, I'd really like to stop by Sevi's course and kind of looked up how it would be to get there. And it's like, I can't do it this trip, but 2025, that feels like be one I would be really, really fortunate to make the cut, with the Matterhorn and Tennessee Open being the ones, but eager to play that course either way, and really excited that the WAG Tour is growing, that you're seeing adventure golf getting a real highlight. And even this year, we were talking about it before we went on, there's players from all over the world that are going to play in this WAG Tour final in the Czech Republic. We have three people from New Zealand and two people from the United States. And then we have one person from the UK, Sevi Kukielka, going to give a little bit of a jabbing to our BMGA friends. Come on, guys. One of you wanted to take that spot, but Yeah, Seve's going to do great over there. I know he's played over on that course before, and lots of players from Germany, Slovakia, Finland, Sweden, Czech Republic, obviously. But yeah, three Kiwis going over there. And
yeah,
Cam,
it's
kind
of wild. The sixth of the players.
Matt Ansley, James McCarthy.
Non-continental Europe, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm rooting for the Kiwis as well. That's such a long trip, and I really want it to be a good experience. And had a nice little battle with James McCarthy in the Putt 18 Division 2, where I almost choked and beat him by a single stroke. But we had some nice exchanges, so kind of rooting for him. He showed up 1 week on Putt 18 saying he's going to play this week with a rubber face putter as he was getting ready, and didn't have his best week, so maybe not the best move. But he also said he made the mistake of mixing tequila and rum, which that kind of spirit, I feel like you can't help but to root for someone who's just like, yeah, I did some day drinking and I'm gonna play some mini golf. So Czech Republic, look out for the Kiwis. They between the three of them, like, skill-wise, personality-wise, I'm excited for them to do it. I think this is going to be James's first trip over there. I think Cam and Matt, I guess, have both played over in Europe. So excited for them, excited for both of our guys from the States to go over there. I think a lot of the Europeans have played in tournaments like this. So I guess I'm kind of excited to see how they fit in and how they have fun and how it all goes. I think they're planning on streaming it, so
they are.
You know, we'll be watching it.
Yeah,
definitely. No work done those days.
No, especially the time. Well, at least one of them's on a Saturday, thankfully.
But
with the time difference, yeah,
we'll have lots of time to talk about that. But our podcast is already going wildly long, and we still have stuff to talk about. So Pat,
the whole point of doing a recording here, although I do think I have a new standard of how I'm going to do a putt 18 tournament, maybe for the AMA one, although I'm not a big fan of tequila. Maybe that's the route to go there.
What is it, rum and whiskey instead?
Rum, whiskey. We'll throw some gin in there. Let's figure something out.
Get some, you know, if you want to go really gnarly, maybe do some like Fernet Branca and Malort.
On that note, let's talk about real exciting, detailed scoring rubrics for the AMA. I think we've teased this in a couple episodes, and we probably will continue to do some stuff, because when we got some feedback and stuff, I think this was one of the areas, you know, most people want to just try to understand. And, you know, for some people playing these tournaments, they could care less. They're out there just playing and enjoying stuff. But we know we got a lot of people who really are for gunning for stuff. And so, you know, we wanted to dive a little bit into what the scoring is and what we've changed. And, you know, overall, we really have tried to create something that balances a lot of different factors and sizes of tournaments and how you finish and where you are and limiting some things. At the end of the day, we were just trying to keep people from just running a bunch of tournaments and getting top because they were able to make a lot of tournaments. And then also just kind of taking into account, you know, not all tournaments are created equal. And as we are in year three of this journey, we're starting to refine some of that. And we'll talk about a little bit that as well. And what we found was last year's scoring was pretty good the way we set it up. And so what's remaining the same this year is, you know, right now for us, we've got three tiers. We've got the blue, white, and red. And that's worked really well for us in terms of trying to right size what those tournaments are. I don't know, Tom, if you want to talk about it now, or we can hold it to the end in terms of how we're looking for a rubric for 25. But
yeah, I mean, I think we're looking at defining it a little bit more clearly, because big question we would get was what makes blue, what makes white, what's red? Like, people were confused, and I think we're still figuring that out. But the idea is that the blue are kind of our top tier, and it's a mix of, there's a pretty good turnout consistently, it's well run, and that we know that there will be a good field in there. The white is sort of the middle tier, and those are tournaments have been run for a while: Farmington, Maine, MC Mini Masters, all fit in that one and get a pretty good turnout, but maybe don't hit the level of the blue. Again, this is a thing we're trying to figure out in the rubric. And then just with the red level, I don't want to say that it's like diminished, but it's sort of our entry level. And these are some tournaments that we're just collecting data on. Frankly, a lot of them we're not as familiar with. And some of them, like the Winter Classic, like the Coziest Open, like the Looniest, they're a little bit newer. And in some cases, frankly, we're also balancing that we don't want to like stack an advantage where we put all three tiers in a really tight geographic area where one person could play three local courses and not really have to compete outside of the crowd that's already there. So if you're in Minnesota, you can play blue and red and virtual. You got to travel for white. You know, if you're living in the Chicagoland area, you can go up to Red Putter or come to Minnesota, and now you can get a red tournament in Kenosha at the Rosebud Open, which I don't know if we had talked about earlier, but that's going to happen at America's Action Territory in June that Mick Cullen's running, and then the MC Mini Masters, which is white. So again, you know, in Connecticut, you have a red tournament and a white tournament, but you would have to, we have a blue,
well, yeah, blue and white. You got to travel for
blue and white, and then you have to travel to Dolphin for red. Same goes for folks in New Jersey. If you're in O Street, you're going to have to travel to either Maine or Farmington to get the white. The idea is that you're going to have to travel a little bit. And the way when the Southern Swing is announced and the way everything's set up, again, it's no one's going to be playing their home courses all the time. We have a ton of home courses. You have a ton of home courses. We want to keep that balance in place, and we want to try to put the tournaments in the top tier that have good turnouts, that are courses that play pretty well, and then we feel like they're well run.
Yeah, and we'll put together a rubric because in some instances, you know, people are going to want to understand, well, what can we do to move up a tournament, or how does a tournament fall down? But I think we will always kind of have that view of geography and you know, kind of an override maybe at the end of the day to just say, does this work for everybody? And the red too, we also, that's like the everything else, right? Like we'll have a lot of tournaments that we just want to encourage them to be part of the AMA, and they may be a small wild tournament that is always just a red. They're never going to be a blue, but that's perfectly fine because we want that. We want those different levels because, again, if we had all blues, that's a different organization than what we are right yeah. now. We may not necessarily want that. So there'll definitely be more definition for people who are looking for that in 2025. But to some extent, there's always going to be that consideration of, are we meeting everybody's needs geographically? And is it really, at the end of the day, fair for everybody?
And some again, of it's out of our control too.
Right. And there's, you know, there's huge swaths of the country we don't even have a tournament in yet as well. And as we get there,
the entire Western half.
Yeah. We'll have to have different ways to kind of manage that if we get to, you know, 60 tournaments, which would be wild. But that's there. So structurally, that's all there. So really, like when you're going out and playing, if you're interested in that, we have them in the events page tagged as to what color they are. So it's pretty clear of like, if you're somebody who really is into the competitive side, you really want to know, how do I get these points to stack up? They're there listed on the event page, and we've got it also in the compete page of just a quick summary of what's in each one. So you can look at that. And really where that plays out from a points perspective is we're keeping the same structure as we've had for the tournaments. We award base points for where you finish. We award bonus points for the top finishers. And then once you start playing more than one tournament, you get a point for the number of tournaments you play. So there is a bit of a participation piece in there that probably breaks some ties and stuff, but won't significantly drive you from 20th in the AMA to first necessarily. But we do want to give credence to people who are going out there and putting their game against a lot of people, you know, as much as they can. So same structure that we're going to do in 24 as we did in 23 around that. What's really changed is kind of the numerical values within some of those structures. And so we set up the base points. It's done NASCAR-ish style, I guess is the best way to do it. So your top point person gets the most amount of points, and then you subtract one for every place after that. Our base at the Blues start at 30, the Whites start at 20, and the Reds we had kind of variable last year, and this year we just set it at 12 because we looked at the number of items we have. So basically, if you're first place in a blue, you get 30. If you're 30th or below in a blue, you get 1 point. And anywhere in between, there's a math value to that. Pretty simple to do. The bonus points, and we've also... go ahead.
And I was going to say with the base points too, that I think is a really... that it might not be necessarily intuitive, but if you play two red tournaments... you don't, for the base, get your average. You get the best of them. So if you come in third in one, where you would get 10 points, and 12, and first in another, where you'd get 12 points, your base is the 12. Where it really comes into rewarding you is where we'll talk about the bonus points. But the idea is if you want the base points, you need to play in each of the division or each of the tiers. And that's how, if you compete well in each of the tiers, you'll end up getting ranked. And that's kind of why geographically we have it so that you have to travel to play in at least one of the tiers, if not maybe multiple. Ideally, you're not having to travel for more than two, but again, we're not there yet. The whole western half of the United States is a minus what like Brock's doing with like some national putting tour stuff that I saw on their calendar. It's kind of just like a desert for competitive mini golf so far.
Yeah. And so there's no penalty for playing either. The first year we did some averaging. So it's basically just like play as many blue tournaments as you want. You'll get your best score as a base point out of all of that. And like Tom said, where you really, what ends up being the differentiator we've seen over the past couple of years with both scorings, and we'll probably see again, is the bonus points. Cause that's where it's cumulative. And what we did was restructure things a little bit. For the Blues and Whites, we expanded the amount of bonus points. So the examples here, and honestly, I should have mentioned, we will have the link to the to all of the document where we have all of this in the show notes. You can find it on the AMA website, because you listening to us, you're probably like, feel like you're going to be one of those memes with the mathematical equation in your head going. But at the end of the day, really what you want to do is finish high in these tournaments. So in blue, it's the top 10 you're going to get bonus. It's the white, it's the top 7. And the red, it's the top 3. If you're finishing there and you're finishing there consistently across tournaments in those tiers, you're going to start to rack up the bonus points. And the other thing we did is increase the differential between first and second by one. So if you're an F1 fan, this kind of works a little bit the way their F1 scoring is, in terms of first place gets an extra boost. So the example here is, if I'm in the white, I win first place, I get 11 bonus points, and second place is 9, and then it goes down to 1. And so that's where if you play two blues and you finish first in two blues, which we haven't had yet, you'd still only get 30 base points because that's your best score, but you would pick up 22 bonus points from that. And that's really going to be the
huge
the driver.
Separator.
Yeah. And the benefit of if you can do well in multiple tiers, it kind of gives us that, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. If you're able to go to a lot of events and do well in a lot of events, you know, at least top 10, and even in the reds, it's top 3. So it's a much smaller number, then yeah, you probably deserve to be up high in the rankings because you're kind of proving that out the way you're playing. So yeah, that's, we tweaked that a little bit again. We did try to do a lot of statistical stuff around there. The other thing when it came to tiebreakers, we heard some pretty good feedback on was we had repositioned everything. So when there was a tie, so for example, second and third place, if there was a tie and you broke that tie, all of the benefit, both on the base and bonus points, would go to the person who won that tie. And you had some feedback of like, well, is that really the right way to do it? Because for the rounds that we played, you know, we played exactly the same, which is really what the base points is supposed to award. And we're like, right. Yeah, that kind of makes sense, right? Like, so from tiebreakers now, if you're second and third, the only thing that's going to go up to the second point is the higher on the bonus points. So you both get the same base points for second place, because that's what you did in the core tournament, and then the tiebreakers, however the tournament does their tiebreakers, will have the bonus points. And, you know, if there's no tiebreaker, we'll split the bonus points and stuff like that. We separate all that. So that was a great piece of feedback we got from the players mm-hmm. and heard from a few people. And we'll be interesting to see the way that plays out, because we've already talked about there's been a bunch of playoffs and just a few tournaments we've had already, and don't see any reason why that's going to stop, especially because a lot of our tournaments are not 10-15 round tournaments, right? So there's a big potential for that, and I'll be really interested from a math perspective to see how that works out. Anything else on the core scoring before we talk about something new we're going to look at this year?
No, I think that the main thing we wanted to do was to play around with it a little bit without making any dramatic changes. I think I had talked about this earlier, whether it was in the players meeting or on the podcast, that my initial inclination was to really like do some wild changes. And I'm like, wait, like, we don't know anything yet. We've ran this for 3 years. First year was a real test run. We had very few tournaments compared to what we have right now, and we're jumping it up quite a bit. I think let's see what we have in these tiers and figure out what really fits in these tiers for blue, white, and red. I'll say that the balance is a little funky this year, where we'll probably have more blue than white, and we'll just have a ton of red. And I think ideally we find a way to make those blue really kind of go out of your way to go play, and those white are going to be stronger ones, and that maybe the blue ones move around a little bit. I think we're still figuring out what that would be, and we're working on a rubric with that just to kind of make sure that it all stacks up, and getting lots of feedback on it just so that people don't feel like, well, boy, Putting Penguin a couple of putts in O Street and Mick all run these tournaments and everything seems to favor them. It's like, that's not really our goal. It's just that we happen to be running tournaments. We've seen lots of people with good ideas that want to run tournaments over the years, that some of them, they're part of the AMA scoring season for a reason. Others are not. And that's perfectly fine. Just some of them don't fit as well. Like, we have one or two tournaments where you have to play the house ball, and that's a little unconventional. And some of them with goofy rules and novelty holes, and that's fine. But there's some courses where they want you to use house equipment, or people come up with like really kind of random rules. And then there's just some that are not run really totally above board, or, and that we want to avoid that just because we want people to take the sport seriously. So we're taking our time and really trying to learn from what others have done and take the feedback seriously. I think that the fact that players were asked for feedback and that we're making changes, we've heard really great feedback just for asking for feedback. And I think that is what we wanted. We're players. We've wanted to give feedback on tournaments and wanted to be at least acknowledged. And in some cases where people got in trouble, they were only acknowledged by being punished instead of saying, oh yeah, that's like a thing we could do a little bit better and would be something well-liked by all the players. Because ultimately, if you have a course and you don't have players, you don't have anything.
Well, and we're sports fans, right? Like, I mean, we've all seen our favorite sports or any of the sports we follow change rules, change, you know, and some of them have taken the wild swings and you sit there and you go, I don't know if that was the best idea. And we've tracked what other mini golf associations have done. So, yeah, I mean, I think that point of we're going to do slight course corrections, and it's, you know, we try to go in the background here and kind of run different scenarios and see how different things come out. And, you know, it does get tough when you've got four or five people who all are kind of the same, because we'd have that big regional difference, right? It's very hard for us to put all of our players head to head. But if you're taking big swaths of like the top 10, the middle 10, it's hard to say, like, and we do the college football analogy, right? Like, it's hard to say that those people shouldn't be in the top 10 in some order. And so I feel pretty good about that at the end of the day. And honestly, I wish I could make some changes to make it easier for, like, last year I didn't play a white tournament. and that, like, I had no chance of being in the top 10 because of that. And that's fine. And so I do like it. Well, I mean, we talked about feedback. We did a survey at the end of the year, but as we go through, we'll probably do some more stuff this year. But I mean, you all know how to reach us. Hit us up on podcast, on AMA, you know, and especially right after you play a tournament, if there's something that you see and you have a question, like, we're trying to do it. But yeah, I love it. And so we're, speaking of test driving, we're also looking at different ways to expand recognition. And so one of the things we knew is, like, we are very regional just from a big travel perspective. And so we're going to test drive regional rankings. We're going to group a bunch of tournaments into certain regions. We're going to throw out some of the limitations to just say the most amount of points you get in this region, we're going to define a regional winner if you played in that region for that year and have a couple regions and just, you know, give people a different way to try to earn some stuff. And, you know, at some point we'll get all the what we're giving out to all the people defined and talked about. But, you know, if you're the Midwest region, you're South, you're the Northeast, or, you know, how we're structuring that. You know, there's a potential that you could win something and not be in the top 10 of the AMA for whatever reason. And we're going to look for more stuff, whether it's types of courses or, you know, youth versus whatever division. And but that's all stuff that I think we don't feel like we want to start introducing until we get the data and can look at it and understand who our player base is and build up a few years of things and actually feel like, all right, we've got our hands around this at the end of the day. So that'll be coming soon, but I feel good about it. Like I said, we'll have a document, but, you know, and reach out. And I think at the end of the day, we've got the scoring stuff that's up on the page too. So you can kind of see it as the stuff gets filled out and look at some of the things. And if you ever got a question, yeah, that's what we're here for.
You know what? I did notice one thing that we had forgot to discuss, which was the virtual tiers, where we slightly adjusted them. So we really wanted to emphasize the top finishing spots where you get 5 points for first, 4 points for second, and 3 points for third. And you can only get a max of 10 total in virtual tournaments, getting 5 in putt 18 and 5 in walkabout. They're not additive with two walkabout events. Like Jorge won 2 last year, only got 5. We max people out because we do want to incentivize the in real life playing, but we also want to encourage people to check out these forms that we think are legit. And frankly, from playing walkabout, there are people that I'd shared rounds with that I'd mentioned are in real life tournaments. There's this one woman who is incredibly good at walkabout, knew how to take shots, knew how to set herself up. And she's in Maine, and I was like, oh, they got this great group of people up there. And she's like, honestly, offline, I can't play in real life, that I have some severe allergies. And I think she was like immunocompromised, and it just didn't work for her. There's some people that, you know, they have like severe social anxiety and other things where walkabout, putt 18, you can do it from home. Talk about accessibility. I hate to admit it, but a lot of the courses that we do our stuff at are older courses that have been grandfathered in, that don't have to fit into the wheelchair accessibility ADA rules. And people who, like the Access Mini Golf guy, Tim's playing putt 18, but he can't play on a lot of the other courses in the Midwest. I don't think any of the courses in the Midwest near him are accessible, but I'm glad that he'll be able to play putt 18. And part of the reason that we do no time limit in our putt 18 event is for that accessibility piece. Maybe there's someone who has severe anxiety and it takes them longer to play. It's hard to do that in the league without getting a ton of points taken away, but we make an exception for it. We really want to have all sorts of entry points for the game. That's the only way it grows. And I think we are not... we are really agnostic when it comes to mini golf. Like, there's a million ways you can play it. I was exchanging with our last guest, Richard Godfrey, and he was telling me about 2 different forms of mini golf that we weren't aware of on top of Massebahner that were in Germany that I forget the names, to be totally honest. They were something, they're Kobe golf and Stern golf. And I think they only play them in Germany. And you know what? I want to play them. I want to play both. I want to play both at some time. And I want to play Pit Pat. I think those are the ones that are the tabletop ones. Yeah,
that was the one I thought you were going to talk about.
I'm interested in all of them. Like, I'm agnostic. I think there's room for all of it. There's compelling reasons to play any of it. And there's good reasons why people don't like playing the others. There's people who play Eternit that are probably looking at Park King and going like, oh my God, that's awful. And there's people who look at Park King and then they look at an Eternit course and are like, what the hell is that? Why are they playing with that thing? Why do they have to get into that pipe? That looks impossible. I just got like a 7. Meanwhile, they're over at Park King and they're like taking their ball on a roller coaster. It's different strokes for different folks. And it's not to say that people aren't being competitive in both or, you know, play to different skills. I think that's the kind of stuff that we really want to bring in and why, going back to where I started, the virtual events exist. That we had taken one shot out of it just because it felt too much like a video game, even though it's real putters, real ball that you're controlling with a robot. It's less of like a physical skill. Putt 18 and walkabout, there's definitely a physicality to both of them, and the motion is the same. And speaking of which, I guess this is a perfect time to talk about our sponsor, Walkabout. You know, they're our favorite VR game and pretty much our favorite video game in general. And they just keep coming out with new course after new course, as I mentioned with our previous event. And absolutely loved the last release, the Around the World in 80 Days, even though kind of have to avoid looking down from the course because it's at the top of the Eiffel Tower and it kind of triggers a little bit of my fear of heights that I kind of forgets there. But it's kind of credit also just the game designers that they can make you feel like, oh my God, I almost fell while you're standing in your guest room. But yeah, they just announced a new course, Ice Lair. It's going to be part of the Evil Layers series. And from what I can tell from some of the teasers, seems to be puffins on the course, which having an ice layer and no penguins feels kind of like an evil joke on my co-host here.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, the puffins are like cousins. I mean, they're big up in Maine.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
We'll have a... Yeah, the Maine coast and Nova Scotia, I think, has got a bunch of puffins up there. But they're equally as cute as penguins. I appreciate the entire theming that looks like it's coming our way, and I'm very excited to waddle my way through it.
Yeah, we could have used some scheming penguins, too. I think that could have been for some fun. But yeah, we're going to be excited to dig in. And if it's anything like Laser Layers, we expect the ball will have an interesting path to the cup.
Although I will put it out to our viewers, if anybody knows where there is a penguin on one of the courses in Walkabout.
Oh, I think I might know. We'll have to see if anybody's been listening this long. And speaking of penguins, I'm going to give a shout out to Pingvin. They've given us a few mini golf balls to give away the European style. Across our AMA season, I gave one actually away to Brian Akers. That was his prize for coming in fifth at the Coziest Open. It was a cool, squishy ball. I think it was a large size one, but you can order from Pingvin to the United States and get your stuff pretty quickly. Pat just made an order for Caleb and himself and Dave to pick up some extra balls and pick up a few extra things for me. And it was like little over a week.
It took about 2.5 weeks.
Oh, okay.
It was about 2.5 weeks altogether. So, but still, I mean, pretty good for intercontinental travel and shipping there. But yeah, we got
affordable.
A good order. And the prices, well, yeah, the shipping is like ridiculously how cheap it is. And actually, the prices for what we bought, it wasn't too bad if you're looking to invest in, you know, starter balls and everything. And they got a huge selection of mini golf balls
and the European style putters.
Happy to be partnered with them.
Thank you, Pingvin and Nico and all of them. You've got our money. We're happy to share the good word.
We've got to make up 95% of their U.S. sales over the past two years.
They're super reliable and relatively easy to use. Just put an order in online and they usually will let you know like how much the whole thing will cost via PayPal, and away you go.
And that brings us finally to the end of the episode and our big thoughts mini golf. And so this will refer back to some of the discussion we had, but watching the WPL this week, and especially that second group of Tim and Brian and Jeremy, it really brought to the forefront something we talk a lot about on this podcast, and that's just having fun while you're out there. And, you know, we talked about it. It's an ultra competitive day. Everything hangs on that one round. And they were just out there having fun. They were vamping a bit, like Tom said. And even when stuff wasn't going their way, and it was just a great way to show that the energy that mini golf as a sport can have, it's something that we really need to rely to continue to propel us and set us apart from a lot of different sports. And, you know, we know that it might not be everybody's thing to act that way, but if you have it in you and you're in front of a camera, and Tom and I know this well from being on Holy Moly, but if you're there during a mini golf tournament, you know, the best thing you can do is just show the world your love for the sport. You may win, you may lose, but at the end of the day, it'll come across great that you love the sport and how fun it is for everybody. And with that, we're at the 19th hole. So until next time, putt one ready.
This is what happens when I don't record an episode for a while.
Yeah.